What I love about dentistry is how unique everybody's practices are. And what works for one person may not work for another, and what works for, you know, somebody else may really work for me or may not, and that's okay. It's not like you have to go down this path, and that's awesome.
Welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, the podcast that is dedicated to making clinical dentistry simple. Join us as we decode the complexities of dental care by providing actionable insights into the diverse aspects of clinical practice, the latest trends, and the newest technologies. Whether you're a seasoned clinician or just starting out of dental school, listen in on engaging discussions, expert interviews, and a wealth of tips and tricks to enhance your clinical workflows. So turn up that volume and get ready to transform your clinical practice with the Digital Smile Hub. And now, here's your host, Dr. Tim Anderson.
Welcome back, everybody. We're joined another week, as promised. Like I said, we're getting back into this because I took a little break. We're coming back. I promise we're going to do more clinical dentistry. And that's exactly what we're doing this week. And I feel like every week I say, like, I'm really excited about talking about these topics. But this topic specifically, I get a little passionate about. I think you're going to see this. Normally, we like really prep and dive into, you know, these interviews. This interview is very much winging it because the guest that I'm bringing on, he's kind of like my brother from another mother in a weird way. Like culturally and physically, like we did not look the same, but I tell you guys, there's certain people you meet in your life that you're like, man, you get me, I get you, and it just works. And this is one of those individuals. But I'm excited because I want to talk about a clinical topic that I find interesting from a debate standpoint, but I also find so freaking frustrating. And that's the topic of, what kind of crown are you going to do? And specifically what I mean by what kind of crown are you going to do is like, what are you going to make it out of? And what drives me crazy is dentists fall into like black and white categories. Like dentistry is so many shades of gray. And this is one of those topics that shockingly is very black and white for many of you. And what I'm hoping after tonight's interview is that you guys get to come by and start questioning like why, which is a common theme on this podcast, like why do I do this? Like why do I pick Emax? Why do I pick zirconia? Which zirconia do I pick? Which glass ceramic should I pick? Should I pick a hybrid material? Should I pick a printed material? Should I pick a resin? Like there's all these different things that get me really excited. So back to my brother from another mother. I'm bringing to you guys, this is tonight's special, I'm bringing to you the one, the only, Arash Hosseini. Arash, dude, welcome to the podcast. I feel like you should have been on here like in the beginning, but hey, here you are now.
Let me just start with happy Friday, first of all.
It's a Friday for us. I don't know what it is for you guys, but for us, it is a Friday.
If it's okay, is this allowed on your podcast? Can I crack one open real quick?
For those of you that aren't watching the YouTube version of this or the video version of this, it's a lot more fun to watch us like in person because like there's just more dynamic versus listening to the car. But that being said, most of us listen to our podcast in the car, on the way to work, at work, in between pages, whatever. But yes, Arash has a beverage. I may or may not have a beverage.
And no beverage. If your closed captioning is on while you're driving, it'll describe the beverage at hand. But
the other thing that you'll notice the other thing you're going to notice is Arash is rocking a massive beard right now, which is unusual for me.
Well oiled and groomed and conditioned.
You do that every year? Or is this like a new thing? Like Arash just got married. So is this a married thing? Like now that you got married, you let it go.
It's not the Maury thing. It's a Midwest thing, you know. And you being a fellow Midwesterner, you're in Central Time. You're a Midwesterner, right?
Absolutely.
North.
Rush, where are you coming from, man?
The proud suburbs of Chicago, Illinois, Gurnee, Illinois, right there on that Wisconsin Illinois border. So you know, we've got the same climate and stuff. Maybe you guys have it a little harsher, but I don't know.
Come on, winter time. I feel like you guys get a lot of snow, but it is way freaking.
Wind is harsh. And so this beard is wind protection. And so this season comes around and I feel like shaving is the stupidest thing I could possibly do. And I don't like to put like earmuffs and hats on because it messes with my hair. So I'm just like, I just grow my, you know, all weather protection here and I'm good. I can walk out of the elements and just throw on a jacket.
So that's what's great because so during COVID, like everybody did like weird things. And one of the things I always kind of have like a little bit of a scruff. I don't have a full beard. I've actually never tried to like grow a beard. I think my wife would kill me. I have no idea.
Would. Yeah. It would look good on you.
Yeah. During COVID though, I shaved my face like bare bottom shit, like blade
shit. Shady face.
And my kids about crap their pants. They're like, Dad, you look ridiculous. They're like, do not ever, ever do that again. You look stupid. So
The scruff look is a good look. The look that you have now is good. And that I like to get away with that look, but I don't know. It's a seasonal thing for me. I got to do this. And then you get like the beard oils and the conditioners, and then you can have fun with it. And then it just becomes like this like ritual that you do every morning. And it gets to a point where then you get sick of it come around March or April. And then it's just like, and I'm going to get down to just like the gentleman's scruff look like you got right now. So thanks for the compliment. And
it looks it's a good look on you, man. It, like some people can rock a beard, some people can't. Like you can rock a beard. So
I appreciate it. And my hope here is with this little 30-second segment is that our listeners in their car will then, when they get to their destination, pull up YouTube and pull up this episode. And
they're going to be like, what does he look like?
And see if they're satisfied with the image that you described in their head or not.
I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised, my friend.
I can't wait. But either way, thank you for the introduction. Thank you for having me. And I want to start by asking, which podcast, dental podcast, am I on right now?
Oh my gosh.
And I'm asking that for a reason, not the reason you think.
All right. So as the intro to this podcast told everybody, but this
I didn't hear the intro.
You didn't hear
that. Did you have like a musical and everything?
Yeah, there's a whole thing. Like, this is not like your mom and pop little. This is like a good production, my friend. So
and that's why that was my point with the question is that this is not your average dental podcast. And I get asked to do this all the time. But I said yes. One, because yes, you are my brother from another mother. But you and I, we are like very similar in our passion when it comes to dentistry and non-dentistry things. And I felt like this podcast really captures the essence of what it's be, either me or you. This is the premier dental podcast, in my opinion. And there's a lot of great dental podcasts out there. But with all the limited 24 hours we have in a day, we can't listen to them all. So I hope that our listeners understand that they chose wisely when they're listening to this one.
Well, now you're making me blushing. So now you guys really need to go see the video version of this because now I'm blushing. So I appreciate the kind words of my friend. No, so what that's a good kind of intro into this because, you know, the focus of, you know, when we were developing this podcast, it was like, all right, there are so many great podcasts. Like, let me throw that out there. Like, there are so many really good, high quality podcasts out there, but they're all on like totally random. Like, everybody's kind of got their niche. And one of the things that I'm like, I want to know about like real world dentistry. And honestly, man, like, that's one of the things in 2025 I really want to get back to with regards to this podcast is like, I want to focus on like things that we can do, like challenge the status quo from clinical dentistry, like stuff that we can actually implement versus like just philosophical, you know, business, like team member, like all that kind of stuff. Like there's so many great podcasts on that, but I want to talk about like the real world stuff that A, nobody's talking about, B, people want to talk about, but it really kind of comes back to the things that I love about dentistry is I love the figure out my patient's why of like what drives them. But what I love about dentistry is how unique everybody's practices are. And what works for one person may not work for another. And what works for, you know, somebody else may really work for me or may not. And that's okay. It's not like you have to go down this path. And that's awesome from the standpoint of what we can do with our practice. But one of the things that has always attracted me to Arash, or me to you, Arash, is that you value and have this love for digital dentistry that gets me excited. Like, we get beat down by our patients and our team and all that stuff from a
dentist. Started on that. That's a separate topic. That should totally be next week's episode. Mental health and emotions and juggling the expectations of patients and team members. Let's bookmark that because that's a
that's like a podcast series, to be honest.
That's a series. I think it's a very important one. But yeah, sorry to switch you off, but I hear you.
No, and it's one of those things, but we need to like find the things that bring us joy. And one of the things that has always brought me joy in dentistry was how technology just makes things fun. And I have always prided myself of like, I feel like I kind of know my crap and I feel like I'm pretty good at stuff. And then you meet people, you're like, shit, I don't know anything. And Arash was one of those people, like, when it came to the digital CAD CAM, like, same-day dentistry world, like, I thought I knew everything about CEREC. And then I talked to Arash, and he made me quickly realize that I need to start doing my homework and, like, take more CE in education, because I'm like, clearly he's operating another level. And what's cool...
I have no idea any of this. This is the first time I'm hearing this, so that is, like, a huge...
I'll admit it.
Because I look up to you, man. I look up to you. So to hear this around here...
So from digital though, man, like people here on the know that I like digital, but like tell us a little bit about like what drives you in dentistry? Like you do so many cool things with digital dentistry, but tell the listeners who don't know you, kind of like the style of dentistry you're into, the things you like right now, like what you're doing with your practice right now, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's something that I enjoy talking about, and it's conversations like this with like-minded individuals like you, colleagues like you and our crew of people, because I can't have these types of conversations with like Dr. Johnson or Dr. Brad down the hall or down the street in my area, because not to knock them, they're great dentists, great general dentists, great basic general dentists, but they cannot relate to any of the stuff that we are doing. And so, and again, I'm not saying we're better, but I'm saying our approach and our philosophy with how we treat our patients is very different. And I think I would start to answer your question by quoting my mentor, who was one of the earliest CEREC doctors in the 90s, Dr. Ira Shapira and Dr. Mark Amade. These two were like big on CEREC in the 90s and early 2000s. And so they had a huge influence on me in adopting CAD-CAM to the point where I was that annoying dental student when I got into dental school that kept asking, when are we learning CEREC? And I would get in trouble with the deans and they'd be like, hey, shut up, kid. We don't talk about CEREC here. This is dental school. And like I kept throwing like a fit about it, like, no, we need to have this. And they finally like did like a little lunch and learn about it. My expectations of dentistry were set by trailblazers from the get-go. Dr. Shapira has this quote, and I hope I say it right, but he would always say the difference between work and play is if you're having fun. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing, right? And so I never understood that until I actually started practicing, because I hated my first few years of practice. And it wasn't until I bit the bullet and took the plunge into Omnicam, CEREC Omnicam, that all of a sudden, like, I started having fun and I started forgetting the pressures of being in network insurance. How much am I writing off? Can I afford to pay payroll this week? All those typical practice owner pressures that bring you down when you're on the patient and working, all of a sudden, like, you're having fun, right?
What about it brought you fun? Like, cause here's the thing, like, CEREC, people get so hung up on, like, trying to replace the cost of their lab and all that crap, and, you know, it's not just, like,
yeah.
Like, what I want to, I feel like the people that really, really do well with implementing the workflow and the philosophy of CAD-CAM dentistry, honestly, we'll go back to, like, loving and having fun with it. So what about it was fun to you?
Well, you and I are in the same age group. We're both millennials. And so
all right, Arash, I'm going to ask, how old are you?
I'm 38.
So dude, I like saying I'm a millennial. I am like right on the border, depending on the demographic you look at, you know, I'm 42. So,
you're still close enough.
I'm close. I still consider myself millennial. Yeah.
Did you grow up playing Sega Genesis or Super Nintendo?
I did at my friend's house. That was too fancy for me.
Did you have a Nintendo 64? Really?
Dude, I had a Nintendo. Like, Nintendo.
By the way,
Nintendo.
We are the video game generation, is what I'm saying.
That
right?
is true.
Not the dinosaurs of Atari. We are at, like, the golden age of video games, where we are either at our own homes or our friends. And I was the same way. It took us years before my dad finally caved and bought us a video game system, and it was Sega Genesis. Now, we were saying, Dad, we want Nintendo. Oh, and then we got a Sega Genesis.
Did you play Sonic? Oh, my gosh.
So much Sonic the Hedgehog. But here's the point here, is that whether you're Super NES, Sega Genesis, or Nintendo 64, our generation got into video games at their peak 3D graphics. And the reason why I bring this up is that... in my teen years is when Super Mario 64 came out, and there was a part of Super Mario 64 in the intro page where you could, like, pull and drag and mutilate Mario's face on the N64.
I remember that.
And
me and my brother would always mess around with that and make all these like goofy faces out of Mario. And it wasn't until like early in my Seric journey when I'm doing a shape circular four-dimensional tool and, on a molar and moving some cusp around, I'm like, wait, why is this still familiar? What's happening?
I knew this.
Deja vu. And I'm like, I've developed these skills when I was 12. This is N64 skills, and I'm making money off of it. And I'm like, I got to call my dad. Because my dad would yell at us, like, stop playing Nintendo. Go do your homework. Go study. You're not going to be a doctor if you don't do your homework, right? And I'm like, hey, Dad, look, I'm not only my doctor. Those video games made me good at being a doctor. Boom. Daddy.
I love it.
And it's true. Basically, that early exposure to 3D graphics and these games, that three-dimensional space manipulation and understanding things, which is a subject on the DAT exam for dental school also, but you got to realize it pretty much gave us the foundation that we need to really capture the basis of this CAD CAM and designing crowns, right? And that becomes the fun of it. Like, we're manipulating these things in 3D. We're making something beautiful. In one scenario, you're saving the princess from Bowser. In another scenario, you're saving people from oral healthcare problems and plaque and decay. It all comes together.
I'm never going to be able to look at another Seric crown ever the same again.
Never.
Or any digital crown.
I saved it for you.
You did. I mean, I'm like, I'm saving the princess. Like, I'm doing the world a service by doing this. And that's
great thing. Next time you see a crown, I want you to see that crown and be like, let's go.
And this is why we had Arash on, because he gets it from the standpoint of that. No, but I love that you bring up the having fun, because God, you guys, what drives me crazy is the burnout rate, the stress that we deal with. Like, dentistry should be fun. So many times we look at digital technology and new workflows and whatever it might be as this big, like, financial burden, and we can't do this until we can pay for that. I'm like, we're missing the point of, A, yes, these new workflows and these new digital workflows will allow us to do more dentistry more efficiently, more productively. But ultimately, where I think Arash and I are on the same page is that, God, we have so much more fun doing it. Like, if I had to take another, like, triple tray, light body, VPS, wash, and pressure, like, I'm like, oh my God, I hated that. And now, even to this day, like, I've been doing, like, I don't even know how long I've been doing Seric. It feels like forever. But every single time, even to today, when I go to see a CAD CAM milled in office same day restoration, and I see that how my assistants have created a lab quality restoration, custom stain and glaze, great.
It's rewarding.
Primary, secondary. Like, I look at it, I'm like, I can't believe this crap works. It blows me away. Like, I'm absolutely
put it into it, though. You get into it what you put into it. And this is where I love debating these haters. We're like, oh yeah, Seric's bad. I've seen Seric. I've replaced 100 Seric crowns in my practice, right? These haters that look at it only as a lab bill savings, which is the wrong way to look at it, first of all. And that's something that I will destroy anybody on when they try to argue it in terms of lab bill savings. But if you get the training, if you invest in yourself and your team, your Seric crowns should compete or exceed lab quality stuff. And in my hands, it did. And in my team, it did. But when you just kind of like buy the technology, but don't bother to go through the boot camp that Patterson offers or the training in Scottsdale or North Carolina, and don't bring your team with you, of course you're going to create crap. Like, crap and crap out. I can't take a high-speed dental handpiece and hand it to a, you know, random person on the street and say, hey, you're a dentist now, just because you're holding that handpiece in your hand. The handpiece doesn't make you a dentist. Just like that, the Seric doesn't make you good crowns either. It's just a tool. You have to know what you're doing and master that tool, and then that Seric can get you to good results. But the Seric is not just making that automatically, and I think that's a big misconception. But
completely.
To your point that what you're saying here, a couple of things. It's very important to remember that, you know, we need to remember the why, right? And we want to do it because it's very dull to do the alternative, which is triple trace, alginates, like old dentistry. One of the big reasons why I stopped working as an associate to make extra cash at other offices was two reasons. No steric and no solea. I got to a point in 2016 where even though I was at other offices a couple of days a week making good money, I'm like, if I have to do another jet acrylic provisional or do another composite occlusal filling without a laser, I am like, it's not even worth it. And that literally got to the point where I'm like, I'm done associating. If they don't have these pieces of technology, it's not worth my time. It wasn't even about the money anymore. It was about my time because I felt so mentally exhausted at those practices. Because when you try something good and fun, like you don't want to go back to the way things were.
No, you can't unsee it.
You just can't undo that. And then let's talk about, again, the video game analogy here. Why are video games fun? Because you have levels, right? You start with the basic level. Ooh. And then you, and I think we're quoting one of our mutual friends here, but you level up. Who said that?
I don't know. T-Bone will say he said it. Sully might say
think
it.
T-Bone quoted it. Either way, it doesn't matter who says it. What matters is it's a beautiful thing to say.
It is.
Level up, whether it's your team, whether it's your approach. So
that is such a good analogy.
You can't stay on. See, they said it, but I gave it meaning. I breathed life into their words. So Sully, T-Bone, you're welcome. You can send me a check later. You can use this at your next retreat. That's fine. I'm here to help the industry. But leveling up, let's talk about this. Okay, like a video game, you start with level one and you can be scared and afraid, be afraid to go to level two. Just keep playing the same basic level and get bored and get dull over time. Or you can level up and go to level two and level three. And so as a CAD/CAM dentist, for me, single tooth crowns in the posterior became boring. I enjoyed them still, but I became eventually ready to level up. And whereas in the beginning, I was a big Sirona fanboy and everyone's like, oh yeah, there's Arash. He loves Sirona. He loves everything Sirona. You could put a logo of Sirona on a donkey and Arash would buy it. That's what the people would say. It's kind of an exaggeration, but the point is I loved everything Sirona. Well, I still do for the most part, but there comes a point where you outgrow that single crown, same day dentistry thing and you want to look into something else. So then I got very interested in conservative dentistry, going into biomimetics. Well, how can I bring in biomimetic principles and conserve tooth structure to, you know, to CEREC? Maybe I don't want to shave down and do a traditional prep. Maybe I want to be more conservative and do more onlays and inlays. So I started doing those and great frustration. It was a great challenge. I hated my first onlays and inlays. They are very, very difficult to do. And I would get frustrated and say, oh, you can't do this with CEREC. But I said, no, that's not true. You can do anything with CEREC if you put your mind to it. And sure enough, what did I do, Tim? I leveled up. And I practiced and I reanalyzed the approach and I figured it out. And then it became my favorite thing to do. So many onlays with so many different materials that we have available to us. And then that got, I don't want to say old, but then that got repetitive for me. So then we talk about, okay, maybe there's a world beyond CEREC. Then I got into the InLab, which is CEREC software on steroids. It's what our labs use. And it just opens up the possibilities to more things. We're talking about dentures. We're talking about splits. Now, I used to hate setting denture teeth in wax back in, what is that bubble there? I used to hate doing denture teeth in dental school, right? But I'll tell you right now, as a working adult, I love dentures. Because when you use something like NLAB or Exocad, edentulous is fun. And now I have kind of a niche in my area where I'm taking all these denture patients and it's fun and it doesn't cost me as much as it would cost other people. And then InLab, I outgrow InLab, and what I do now, like you guys, like you and Sully and T-Bone, everyone gets on the Exocad bandwagon, right? So you can say bandwagon because that's like, you can say bandwagon, right?
It's kind of like a bandwagon. I mean, it's
justified though, because then you get into the world, totally. You enter the world of Exocad and you're
like, you can't look back, yeah.
You can't look back. And I'm like, well, this is fun. This is great. And you can still use your CEREC as a scanner. But I'm just using the Exocad as the design software because it opens more possibilities. Because as you level up, you can get those skills. You know, the nice thing about CEREC software is that it's basic, right? And so it's easy if you want like kind of safe and security and, you know, you're a beginner, right? But as you become more advanced and you're ready to push the envelope, you don't need those restrictions and boundaries put in that software. So you outgrow it. And when you level up to the next thing, then you can really break the rules and do it like a pro and get things that you didn't think you could originally achieve.
And Arash, what I think is so important for people to understand is that this didn't happen overnight. And this was a journey. And that's like, we so many times we look at Instagram and we see things, we're like, oh, we got to do this, we got to do that. And we don't realize the sweat equity of like learning the basics and leveling up. Like the process, like you can't just like the whole video game thing. You can't just jump to the final level and think you're going to beat boss. Like you got
that would have been fun anyways. You got to earn it to appreciate it.
And you need to go through some of these things because it all compounds. And that's what I love about all digital technology from the standpoint of that, because it honestly becomes so fun and it opens up your eyes. You start seeing things differently. And one of the things that, as you know, as you kind of mentioned, like you got to take the C, you got to do the work, you got to do the education. One of the things that was eye-opening to me when I got into CAD/CAM dentistry was like, I don't know shit. Like it was eye-opening. Like dental materials back in the day, like that was first year, for me at Minnesota, that was first year dental school. I didn't know anything. Like there was no context. Like honestly, dental materials should probably be taught in fourth year. Like when I actually kind of know what I'm doing, like there should be another, like dental materials 101 is freshman year. And then like D4 year, like that's when you do materials again, because I realized that I didn't know what I was doing. Like I would, like prior to CAD/CAM and digital technology, like I would prep a tooth and I was like, a lot of people, I'd send it to the lab and I'd be like, porcelain crown A2.
We didn't know what the fuck we were doing, Tim. I forgot to ask you, can I swear on this podcast?
Well, we can't now.
Am I going to get canceled?
Well, you might not get canceled. You might not be invited back, but I hope I don't get canceled. Like, as long as the Apple Podcast doesn't kick me out, we're good.
Well, as long as there's a bunch of Andrew dentists like us, I think we'll be fine.
I think we're good. But one of the things that, you know, kind of drove me to like, all right, some of the topics I want to talk about tonight is that as I was evaluating myself, as I was going through my own journey of leveling up, it was like, why am I picking the material I am? And as I talk to more and more clinicians, and as I've done trainings, whether it's smile design or CAD/CAM or whatever it is, it's very clear to me that with a lack of understanding of dental materials, most clinicians become very, very black and white. Yep. Meaning they fall into the category like you can literally, like I kid you not, and you guys, as you're listening to this, I want you to reflect on yourself. Like if I would ask you right now, Dr. Jones, what kind of crown do you prefer to do? And if your answer is Emax, I want to hit you. And if your answer is zirconia, I want to hit you. And if your answer is like a hybrid material, I want to hit you. Like the point is, like so many of us pick a material either A, because our lab likes it, B, because it's what we've always done, or C, we really don't know. And the reason I would challenge is because I honestly believe, and I'll argue this with any material science person, that there is no one material that is best in the mouth for every single situation. All materials, for the most part, can be used if you honor their properties. And some materials are much better in certain situations. So I wanted, Arash, for you and I to kind of discuss, because you and I actually have a little bit of a, not a differing opinion, we just prefer different materials in certain situations. But I want to kind of talk about like why we pick the materials we pick and what indications would kind of like lean us towards that. And before you even mention the word Seltzer Duo, we're going to wait on that one because I know you want to talk about that. And we will talk about that. But I want to hold you back on Seltzer Duo.
And you know me so well, I know. My brother.
I know where we're going with this. But all right.
That's a valid question.
When you're prepping a tooth, honestly, talk to us about some of the, basically the indicators that would influence you on which material you're going to choose and why.
Yeah, I think that's something that's like really overlooked and unappreciated. And then going back to the dental school thing, I would argue whether we were D1s and learning this stuff or D4s, we just wouldn't care back then. It's hard for dental schools to actually give a shit.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I'll tell you why. I can tell you right now, I am an absolute nerd when it comes to dental materials right now. Now, if you told dental student Arash about this, I'd be like, who's this guy? Who cares? Just make it white, right? But
I think through experience, you have a little trial and error. You see what works and doesn't work. And you eventually, because at first it's just all marketing, right? Buy this, buy that. You got the rep coming in here. They don't know what they're talking about, but they're selling you on as if they're a dentist. And we're naive and we listen because we trust the salespeople because we think they have some clinical background when they're just going off of some kind of script, right? But it isn't until you actually use that material in your hands that you see, okay, yeah, they're full of it, or no, this is fantastic and revolutionary. But when you're introduced to something new, it's just a name to begin with. You really need to try it out. Now, I'm not going to use any brand names to start, like Emacs, because quite honestly, Avoclar is not paying me enough to drop their name. So I'm going to refer to it as a scientific name. We're talking about lithium disilicate here, right? And then we've got your lucite reinforced materials. You've got your feldspathics, right? You've got your virgulite reinforced lithium disilicate. You've got your nano lithium disilicate. You've got your lithium silicate, right? There's so many variations.
You can see how this gets confusing for everyone.
It gets very confusing, and they all come out white. They all come in shade A1 and A2 and B1. You can mill them all. They all come in block form. They all come in ingots that your lab can do. And again, your question is posed very well because it really comes down to the indication. You got to look at what's your clinical situation. Why do I want to use this material versus that material? You can't, just because you're a hammer, you can't treat everything as a nail, right? And that's where I share your passion for punching people when they answer that question. I do only zirconia, or, oh, I do only Emacs. No, because too many people just do zirconia for everything, and it's super annoying. I personally don't do zirconia because I don't have room to plug in my new CS6 to sinter zirconia yet.
You feel free to send that CS6 to North Dakota because I will take it off your hands.
No,
I mean, if you're looking for a place where I have room for it, I do.
I'll eventually expand and I'll, you know, have that in my fancy schmancy lab, but that will, you know, be modeled copycat off of your lab one day if I, you know, finish this project. But no, it's a great thing to have, the CS6. I just haven't plugged it in yet. But the point is that right now I'm a glass ceramic guy and a composite guy. And there are some indications where I wanted to mill a composite, or now we're 3D printing things that behave like composite. You've got ceramic materials now that arguably would, you know, are considered ceramics, but I still like milled glass ceramics, lithium disilicates, and, you know, those other names that we've dropped by. But it really comes down to, what am I trying to resolve here? Am I looking for strength? Do I have a lot of peripheral enamel left? How conservative can my prep be? What's the inner occlusal space? What does the opposing look like? Is aesthetics going to be an issue? Like, there's white and then there's white, right? And you gotta see, like, it's going to be something that you want to make it Instagrammable. Is it going to look good? Or is it going to look like a dead white block? And would I post this on my page? You know, these are things that I think about when I'm kind of walking through and deciding this. There's other factors too.
Let's talk about here though. Like, why? Because I would argue that the majority of dentists, especially this day and age, especially newer dentists, really favor zirconia. Why do you think that is? I'll give you my opinion why, but why do you think that is?
I'm going to answer that question with fact. And the reason is zirconia was invented by Glidewell, apparently. Did you know the story?
Well, I know they were the, like, Bruxer crowns were like one of the very first.
Well, the labs got tired. I think Glidewell, one of the biggest labs in the country, and I'm summarizing the story, but they essentially got tired of getting blamed for the crowns breaking. And they're like, we need to develop a material because these doctors are not prepping right. They think they're prepping right. And I've seen because I follow the dental lab pages on Facebook too. And it's hilarious to see the cases
awesome.
They post. It's like, how did some of these people graduate dental school? They shouldn't have passed boards. Like, occlusal reduction matters, guys. And they don't do it. And so zirconia was invented because it could withstand and survive these really, really, really crappy preps where there's no occlusal reduction, right? And so the material was born out of a necessity because they couldn't change the behavior of dentists with poor prep practices. So I feel like it's an easy out, right? It's an effortless material. And I'm going to probably get a lot of hate for this.
No,
probably some people are going to critique
it.
Zirconia is out there now. No. There's that new Katana stuff. Dentsply Store just came out with that new Zircon block as well. It's zirconia in the right hands. If you treat it well, you can make it look beautiful too. But it's in its origin, it came out of a problem, which was poor preps.
Yeah. Well, and I honestly think So here's my take on zirconia. And this is Tim Anderson's opinion, not the opinion of anybody else. I think zirconia became so popular because A, it made shitty dentists look good. So zirconia, for those people who don't realize, is a milled only material. So it is not pressed, it's not layered. It's a milled material that shrinks dramatically, like 22 to 25%. So you can have a really jagged margin that can be milled really, really, really nicely, and it's going to look really good. The other reason I think zirconia makes crappy dentists look good is it's radiopaque like gold. It hides everything. Your margins always look good in zirconia. And I think dentists like that. It makes them feel good on their bite wings. The other reason I think zirconia personally became the number one requested material from labs is that you could bill, there is no zirconia code for insurance. So you bill zirconia as 2740 or a porcelain to ceramic restoration. Even though it's just ceramic, the problem with that is zirconia, because the cost of manufacturing is so much less than glass ceramics, it's also the cheapest restoration from a lab. So the profit margin becomes huge. It makes you crappy dentists look good. It's white enough. And all of a sudden, people think it's the greatest material on earth. And for me, I have a hard time with that, because what it's doing is it's camouflaging a bigger issue of, you know, there are indications. Like in my practice, zirconia is a huge component of my practice. Don't get me wrong. I love zirconia. But I do think that bonded glass ceramics, because yes, you can bond zirconia, but a bonded glass ceramic, the optical properties of a glass ceramic, the optical properties of a feldspathic or a lucite reinforced ceramic are just better. I'm sorry. And when we start looking at these beautiful new zirconias, these 5Y zirconias, you know, for the yttrium content. So yttrium is like, it's how the tetrahagonal whatever is formed. But you got 3-4, and like the original Brux zircons were 3Y, super strong, 0.6 reduction, very, very high compressive strength. They look like shit. Like the only reason they look, decent is because they're glazed, and then the moment they're unglazed, it goes garbage. But these 5Y zirconias are beautiful. They're very translucent. But the problem is they have the properties of a glass ceramic. So why wouldn't I maximize the benefit of the glass and etching of the glass if it has all the same compressive strength, flexural strength? Like, so there's all these different rationales of like why to do it, but the last thing I'll say is that I think there's also a transition in the lab industry, because we've lost the lab technicians and the education programs for lab technicians. So now labs are all apprenticeships, and the majority of new labs, and you talked about ExoCAD, InLab, all these digital technologies, the benefit is this digital workflow. And so these new lab technicians are digital-minded designers, and CAD/CAM zirconia is a digital workflow. There is no layering. There is no handcrafting artistry. It is literally mill, polish, or mill and glaze. Like, that's it.
And in that note, these labs are, you know, the ones that still do it by hand because it's a dying breed. But their demand, they've now become niche. If you are waxing by hand, if you're doing the lost wax technique using ingots, layering ceramics, you find a lab that does that, and all of a sudden, that's expensive. And that's now being called luxury dentistry, right? It is still remarkable what some of these technicians do. And it's sad that it's becoming a lost skill, because the mainstream is so focused on, you know, the faster, more profitable way to do it. But on the flip side, those that remain that know these more legacy techniques, I mean, they have their benefits.
Well, I love one of them. Mike Appa was talking about a thing recently on one of his Instagram or social media or whatever. And he was talking about basically like how like cosmetic dentistry should be a specialty. And I 100% agree, because, you know, like there's what frustrates me is like getting from A to B, you can use any car. But if you use a Honda Civic versus a Maserati or a Lamborghini or whatever, like it's a different experience and it's a different outcome. It's a different ride. And yeah, you get from point A to point B, but they're not the same. And I think with dental materials, it's important to understand that a crown is not a crown.
Exactly.
And when you get your work back from your lab and you're like, God, this doesn't look like this fancy shit from Instagram. It's like, well, yeah, because you didn't pay $600 a unit for feldspathic or foiled, you know, porcelain or custom cut back and layer it. Like, you didn't pay for this. So,
back
yeah.
Though, they didn't pay for it. I'll go back even further. They didn't pay attention to what they need to do to achieve that. More importantly, yes, there's a financial component. But beyond that, they didn't even know the details that they need to be even asking for. Because their mindset, their assumption is, as long as I say this, they should know I want what I saw and answered.
And I'm not a total hater of zirconia. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love zirconia. So there's some huge advantages to zirconia. Like, the fact that it can be milled and shrunk, like, yeah, you can all of a sudden start doing more of these, like, feather edge style preparations that would normally be done in metal. You can do these very, very well. And bonded zirconia does do well. I'm not a huge fan of bonded veneers and zirconia, but that's a different podcast.
And there's a whole bunch of debate about it on the Facebook groups that I don't think we are getting into that.
No, and I love zirconia as an abutment material, like a custom abutment. I love it because you get the hemi desmosomal attachment. Like, polished zirconia is...
With implants, it's a totally different conversation with zirconia.
But honestly, like, polished zirconia is the best restorative material that we have in dentistry. It's better than any of the porcelains. That being said, unpolished zirconia is the worst material that we have. It's like this catch-22 of, like, what do you do? And honestly, like, I'll talk about my workflow here, Rosh, and then you can kind of talk about yours. Like, when I'm looking at a case, before I start prepping this thing, honestly, the first thing that goes into my mind is, am I bonding this or am I looting this? And if I'm bonding this, that's dictated by enamel in my world. Like, if I can get solid enamel, I don't care if it's a second molar, I'm going to bond it, okay? If then the second criteria becomes, if I want to bond it, can I get isolation? And with our Soleas and our laser dentistry, like, I would argue that I had never found a tooth I couldn't bond to from an isolation standpoint. Like, never. With my technology. Like, it, the laser dentistry and like CO2 lasers and erbiums, I would argue also, there's nothing that I couldn't bond to. But ultimately, for me, the dictation is enamel. If I have an enamel ring, I want to be conservative and I can bond. But if I don't, and I'm, you know, it's recurrent decay, it's root caries, and I'm down in no man's land, and I'm going to loot, then I personally like the mechanical and physical properties of zirconia from the standpoint of how the tissue loves polished zirconia, how I can keep it super conservative as long as I have a ferrule of 4 millimeters. Those are the types of decision tree that I go into before I prep. So that's the thing that kills me. And this is going to be my soapbox tonight. And then I'll get off and I'll let you talk to Rosh. That when we have clinicians that prep the tooth first and then try to decide what restoration we want to do. Like, for me, it kills me because if, like, you can't do that, you have to know where you're going. You should never touch a tooth unless you know exactly what restorative material you're prepping for. You should know the material requirements of that material, how much occlusal reduction, how much axial reduction, how is it processed, how is it fired, can it be glazed, should it be polished, like, all these things. Like, you need to know these things before you ever touch a tooth. You should never go into it first. So for me, I'm like, there are a lot of indications where I like zirconia. There are a lot of indications where I like EMACs, or like you said, lithium disilicate. The problem in my practice is lithium disilicate in my world is a milled restoration. And the worst material to mill is lithium disilicate. Why? Because it's so freaking brittle, it chips. So
on the margins.
On the margins.
It chips on the margins. So you're talking about marginal integrity here. Yeah.
So
and then you have to compensate for that. But you're right. That's one of the biggest challenges.
So for me, like, when I start looking at some of my anterior work, like, everybody's like, I'm EMAX, EMAX, EMAX. I'm like, don't get me wrong, I love EMAX. But I also love a lot of other, like, my favorite material on the planet, without a doubt, later is not a material I like better. I love Empress Multi restorations. The old school Empress Multi. That block is
it's beautiful.
Radiant.
It's beautiful.
Every single veneer I do is in that. It is gorgeous. And if it is bonded to enamel, it is just as strong as Emax. Because, guys, when you look at the SEM studies of, like, when Emax and these materials debond, if it's to enamel, guess what shears away? The enamel, not the restoration. So it's one of those situations where I love all these other materials, but so many times we're like, oh, I'm an Emax guy. So I'm just going
to... You know where the E from Emax came from, right?
I don't.
It came from Empress. It's Empress Max.
You guys, I feel like, you know what? Now that you say that, I have
been told. Because I'm a dental material nerd. It was meant to be the replacement. But chemically speaking, lithium disilicate is not the same as lucite reinforced glass ceramic, which is what Empress is.
Empress. And it's a lot weaker. It's different optical properties.
Totally different. But you're absolutely right. And I was actually going to play devil's advocate.
Let's do it.
You're bringing up, now, if we were back in the 1990s or early 2000s, the debate wouldn't be zirconia versus Emax. So the debate would be Empress versus Trilux
or Vita Mark II. Vita Mark II is Trilux Forte, is Trilux.
So Trilux and Trilux Forte, that is also another
beautiful one of my favorites. One of my favorite veneer cases from earlier in my career was a Trilux Forte. And then I had like all these like Vita Mark II blocks that I got for free in my CEREC kit package. And, you know, one of my mentors was like, oh, yeah, it's the same thing. It's literally the same thing, just not layered. And so I started playing around with that stuff. And I'm like, oh, damn, this stuff is beautiful. And there was a convenience for it. So nice. And the convenience of what was popular, I mean, my mentors that I was talking about, that's all they did. That was their bread and butter, Vita Mark II. And then, you know, when I would shadow them, we would see them in recall and stuff. And like, they still look nice. And they would share the pictures with me and say, look, this was like, we did this back in 2004. I'm like, you're kidding me. It's absolutely beautiful. And I'm sure some listeners out there, I don't know if, you know, that age group would listen to podcasts, but just kidding.
You gotta be careful. I'm gonna get like messages now.
Mark II is a really, really nice material, and it doesn't get the love and attention it deserves because Emax was so brutally successful that it basically took over the market when it comes to glass ceramics. But I would say that there are cases where it's justified to use some of these materials, like Empress also doesn't get a lot of love. But you know where it does? These South American offices, the doctors, these Brazilians and Venezuelans and the Chileans with these amazing Instagram pages. I feel like 90% of the cases they post are Trilux Forte or Empress Multi. And they do amazing veneer work with it. We're talking 6-10 unit type cases. They're posing. It's like the gold standard down there. And maybe that's probably that market is what's keeping the stuff from getting discontinued. It's very, very popular.
I love it. I'm going to tell you, man, it has got to be one of my... The Trilux Forte and the Empress materials, like, I just love them. They're such good materials. Yeah. All right. The next material I want to talk about before... Because I noticed when I open this next can of worms, I know it's going to last some, so we're going to save it for the last 10 minutes. But the other materials that I also love are my hybrid materials. And what's challenging me on those is that my hybrid materials are basically like... It's a composite block that has ceramic filler in it. I mean, at the end of the day, it's composite. It's just... It polishes better. It's a little stronger. But it's really composite.
Listeners, can you just name some brand names that you would consider as a hybrid material?
My favorite hybrid material is Cerasmark by GC. Like, I love that block. It polishes so beautifully. From a true composite block, I love Ivoclar's TetraCat. That was another great
material ever that's non-ceramic. I cannot talk enough about how much I absolutely, absolutely love TetraCat, and that allows me to do MOD composites without the stupid banded wedge. I can still build the patient as a composite if I wanted to, and it just looks so much more beautiful than any handmade composite that I could do.
But you know what's interesting?
That is so amazing.
I don't use it anymore.
Same,
because it's been replaced
by 3D printing.
3D printing. So that's a great segue to the fact of, like, as these technologies evolve and materials change. Like, the composite blocks are awesome. My gosh, yes. They're so awesome. But what changed for me was that the challenge I had is that I often felt like to mill these inlays and onlays out of composite, the sprue became challenging. Because you ended up inevitably always having the sprue either fully on the occlusal or the interproximal. And then by the end of it, it's like, well, now just like, especially on the more conservative preps, it just like, it just kind of looks like a polished blob at the end of it.
What changes the manufacturing, it makes it a
and that's just downside. It's just one of the downsides of additive reductive manufacturing. What Shearer seems was additive manufacturing and 3D printing, specifically when SprintRay came out with their ceramic crown resin, which was over 50% ceramic resin. And you know, they were really pushing this as like a crown replacement and all that. But where I saw this as like an amazing material was like, oh my gosh, this is now my go-to inlay onlay material because it's literally print and polish. And the difference is my sprue is no longer this huge sprue from the block that has to withstand the mill. It's all of a sudden these tiny little supports that are, you know, could be on the clusel, could be on the process. It doesn't matter where it is.
Well, your flexibility on where you put it.
Yeah, and so it's all of a sudden all this anatomy.
Yes.
The other thing is, because it's additive manufacturing, you don't have the concept of overmilling, which is when the burr is, you're limited based on the burr size of your mill. So like either the veneers
become an issue.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a pristine prep, with, again, the majority of dentists, if you're not digital, especially, you don't see your preps. I think with our scanners, we were able to critique our preps and make them cleaner or smoother. But even then, we'll have some imperfections. And those imperfections can become costly milling-wise. Undercuts become very difficult to navigate. So by printing them, like you said, we have a lot more flexibility in the angulation of how these are printed layer by layer, but we're able to fit things in tighter spaces.
So true. Are you printing? Are you using like ceramic crown resin for a lot of your...
I think it's one of the reasons which you didn't realize, but the reason I'm on this podcast right now is that you and I are on the same page on this topic. I think that's what it came down to. I have three CEREC mills because I used to do quadrant dentistry. Even when it came down to composites, I would mill them and have three mills going at the same time. SprintRay changed that. And now with the Midas, which is a restorative only mini printer there, I have not milled any composites in at least over a year now. And yes, I loved the optical properties and the aesthetics of that material when it was milled. But the convenience that you pointed out, the sprue positioning, the ability to print multiple restorations, like I can print on onlay or inlay, or I can print 15 of them. It's the same amount of time. And so that all of a sudden shifted my decision-making tree because I'm like, okay, does this patient want to be here as long as possible? Even with three mills, if I was going to do, you know, a full upper arch or two quadrants of MODs, MODs, you're still going to be here for a significant amount of time. And then you're putzing around with sprues and then eventually you're going to overdo it and have an open contact. And that's going to be like killer.
Yeah.
But then you're printing all of these, all of a sudden your contacts are just beautiful. Now, there is a trade-off. And as amazing as the material is, and you can make it look gorgeous, it still doesn't polish like Tektric would.
No.
But
I agree.
I have hope. I have hope here because, again, SprintRay is a trailblazer and an innovator in the market, in the field. They are putting so much in R&D. In this new partnership that they have with Ivoclar, which is not a secret, that's on the open now. With Ivoclar's credibility in the dental material field and SprintRay on the hardware side, this is something that excites me so much. And if you remember, when we saw the reveal, I think it's a kind of good place to insert that you and I are beta testers for this company and we get the heads up of things. And you know, we had a lot of excitement in Miami when they revealed this partnership. Me being a big Ivoclar fanboy, but also a SprintRay fanboy, it was just the best news ever. And I'm so excited to see what comes out of Liechtenstein. Because if they can come out with a printable Tektric, it's game over.
Yeah.
It's game over for these bitches.
So for me, I'm waiting for the printable Empress. But yes, the Tektric is also amazing.
Yeah, and the printable Emax is another thing that everyone's waiting on. But that'll be
So what I think, so the other big elephant in the room with regards to a lot of this digital workflow is like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, I hear you talk about like, you scan your restorations and then you print them, but how the hell do you get there? And one of the things that Arash and I have to our disposal is we have both the ability to either scan it, send it to ExoCAD, design an ExoCAD, that's one workflow. The downside for me in my office with that workflow is that means that Tim is designing because my team member, I only have one computer with ExoCAD. And so it's like, it's my computer. So it doesn't work really well. The workflow that we usually do is we design it on the CEREC as if we were going to mill it. The difference is we send the file to InLab, which Arash was alluding to is like this lab version of CEREC.
It unlocks CEREC.
Yeah, and what we can do with InLab is we can export the STL, the file of the restoration, to print. So that, for me, unlocked the opportunity. Like, my team members can design all the crap, design the whole quadrant of the whole mouth, and then we just export it, and then they print it. Where I get really excited is that, you know, SprintRay has had their AI, it's through ThreeShape, but it's their AI 3i.
Not anymore.
ThreeShape's Automate, but they're AI crown design. What's coming here, though, is their inlay onlay AI design. And that changes everything. Because exactly. Now we can scan and walk away. And then all our team members have to do is upload, marginate, or verify the margin. And with inlays and onlays, there's really not a lot of AI design that goes on. I mean, the contact is what it is, and the occlusion is what it is based on the
margins are where they are.
And you move forward and you hit print. So for me, I get so excited about how AI is going to implement or integrate into the inlay onlay workflow with the Midas. Oh, I'm so excited. The current crown, I'm like, eh. It is what it is. I don't love it. I would still rather use my CEREC or my mills to mill a glass ceramic. But holy crap, inlays and onlays, give me 3D printed restorations all day, every day. Like, and that's coming from a guy who loved GC Cerasmart, but give me a material that's similar to GC Cerasmart.
And it's going to come. I promise you it's going to come soon. And when it comes, it's going to be revolutionary. But this AI is really exciting. And I know it's kind of like a buzzword right now, and it's like the talk of the town. And everyone talks about it in every industry. I'm really big on AI. I use ChatGPT, Google Gemini, and Microsoft Copilot almost daily in my practice, from everything from medical billing soap notes to coming up with forms and optimizing things. Like, I utilize AI all the time. So now when we take something that I really, really get excited about and apply it to the other thing that I'm excited about, it's like merging two of my favorite things. So AI and CAD-CAM dentistry. So you got to understand that when I see people like Mark, who is the head of spearheading the development of SprintRay's AI solution for this restoration, gets so passionate about this. And he will send and share all these like teasers of stuff like, oh, look at this big breakthrough. We got this. It's coming. So that inlay onlay design is going to be such a big deal. And it's going to really, really streamline our process, where we're going to look back at this in 2028. And be like, can you believe that back in 2025 and 2024, we used to like sit in our offices and click and move the mouse around and design contacts? Like, we were so laying back then. And it's going to happen.
That, you got to remember, before that, it was we did it by wax.
We did it by wax. So, or even before that, we would send it out to a lab to do it for us. And we'd have to wait two weeks for it. But here's the other fun thing is that, you know, Exocad also has their new AI feature that's come out and rolled out. And that was really freaking sweet. Like, it's still not as amazing as the 3Shape AI.
Their simulation, smile simulation.
It's going to be a big deal because everyone's getting on it. This competition is good for us because it's going to drive all these companies to, you know, make the best and most efficient solutions that we can get our time back. So we can delegate to our assistants, and then we can screw around on Instagram while this stuff is being done in our labs, or we can like do a podcast real quick for the patient. Enjoy the life. You know, I'm thinking about buying the new Nintendo Switch 2 so I can just kind of like play video games while my assistants are designing the crowns and printing them and everything like that.
Look at that.
It's a possibility.
Full circle, you guys. All right, Arash, here's the deal. Like, I could talk to you for like 4 hours. We are definitely going to get you back here because, A, I want to talk about AI with you. Specifically,
my favorite. I love AI.
So you've got like, and I think everybody, that's a big buzz thing right now. So everybody wants to talk about AI, whether that's like Overjet or Pearl or how it's integrating our software and our design, all that stuff. The other thing, I specifically did not discuss the elephant in the room, which I'm going to give a little teaser, is Arash is a huge lover and believer in Seltzer Do-Over or Seltzer Duo. And we are going to discuss that on another episode because
Seltzer Duo gets its own episode.
It might need its own episode because that is such a polarizing conversation for many.
Polarizing in the CAD CAM world, and I'll kind of hold back because I was excited to talk about it, but
I know.
We're giving it its own.
We're going to do it again. No, we're going to have you back here in a couple of weeks. So for everybody, like, I hope you can see how like Arash and I just love these topics, and it's so important because like dental materials do impact our everyday workflows, the outcomes that we have, the clinical outcomes, how our team members integrate into our workflows, all of these things, you know, the whole thing from leveling up and enjoying what you're doing, the whole Nintendo and situation. So I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as I did. I loved it. Arash, dude, you are, like I said, you're my brother from another mother, dude. I love you, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
This was fun. This was great.
We're going to get you back on.
I can't wait for the next one.
For if people want to get a hold of you, you're like, dude, who is this dude? How do they get, what's your Instagram handle?
Well, right now, my personal Instagram is Arihoss, A-R-I-H-O-S-S. But if you put me on a spotlight like this, I might have to make
a shameless
Instagram
plug?
An Instagram alter ego celebrity page, maybe. We'll see. It depends on how famous you make me.
All right.
Well, but maybe I'll make one to be more like mainstream.
Well,
but,
we'll figure that out. But for now,
my Instagram is not as cool as yours. I got to give you props, though, real quick. When I first found out about you, I want to just put this story in real quick. When I first met you in real life, I came at you like a psycho girly fan chasing the Beatles in 1970s, right? Like, oh my God, it's Tim. Oh my God. And you're looking at me like, who's this crazy person? Why does he know so much about me? I was a big fan of your photography, your Instagram page and your photography, whether it was Saleya or CADCAM or everything. Yeah, I was like, okay, cool. Another dentist that has the same shit as I do. Awesome, right? Photography, I respect it. And I'm like, I have a DSLR camera. Why can I not get pictures like this? And so you drove me into investing and leveling up my camera game too.
Yeah.
And I still am not at your level, but I have some pictures and I'm trying to get to the, Dr. Tim Anderson level of photography. But I got to say, you deserve credit on that because your Instagram page is worth the followers that you get. You've earned your followers because you have good content. And so maybe I'm not ready to post things because I don't have content like yours. You know, I want to be able to share cases and share cool things and the shadow and the lighting. Like, you're a master of that stuff.
It's always fun, you guys. There's here's the thing. There's always, we're always improving. We're always leveling up. And the key with this, like, Arash and I feed off each other and the energy and finding people and moving forward. Like, just keep freaking moving forward, you guys. So until next week, we're going to check you later. Until then, keep smiling and have a great evening.
Take care. Have a great weekend.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when all the new content is released. And don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends and colleagues. For more information about all things happening within the 3D Dentist family, follow us at www.3d-dentist.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you are leaving with new insights to help transform and level up your practice. Until next time, keep smiling.